Hey, this is Felissa Rose. I'm Angela Baker in Sleepaway Camp, and you're listening to Midwest Monsters Podcast. Yeah!
I'm excited. I'm sorry. I picked this topic. I love this movie.
It's a scary movie. It's a scary movie. And it still affects me just the same. I cannot put that on.
I gotta tell you, something about this movie worked for me. I was like, it rocked.
So, I mean, that's debatable, but I mean, it's a great movie.
That, you know, it's my right as a viewer, as somebody who spends my money and time to go watch these films, to have my opinions and be disappointed.
But that's what I love about this group doing this podcast right now, is that on so many pages, we're like right there with each other. But then, I mean, it's almost inevitable that, you know, half the time we're going to go, you're out of your mind.
You are out of your mind. I'm sorry, but that's...
Welcome to the Midwest Monster Podcast. And now, here are your hosts.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Midwest Monsters Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Grizzly Abner, and I'm joined by...
Mad Chan.
Professor Wagstaff.
Ooh, that's right, friends. The original three coming back at you. Been a while since just the three of us have rode together on one. We've certainly had the rotation going and some of the good chemistry coming off of that. And now, getting back to the core, because we decided that when we went to this rotation, we were going to make sure that the original three rode again. At least every few months,
right.
Just to make something happen, to see what that was like. So, so we've got another Monster Mash coming your way. Professor, do you have a number for this one?
At this point, no.
Okay.
Are we on like 38 or
something? Mid-20s.
We have finally got the professor to quit counting.
Yeah.
So, good, good.
By the time you're listening to it, look at the title of the track.
Yeah.
There you go.
we finally beat it out of it.
Right.
All right, so we're going to go around and say what we picked and why. And then we'll just jump right into them. So one of your hosts right here, Grizzly Abner, I picked Pontypool because it had been offhandedly recommended to me. And actually, it was in a book that Professor loaned me years ago when you were still living at Silvertree or whatever they called that place you live. It was a cult classics book.
Oh, yeah.
And Pontypool was listed in the cult classics book. And a friend of mine had said, hey, it's on Netflix. You should check it out. Which is funny for it to already be in a cult classics book with it being relatively new.
Yeah, because that would have been like brand new.
Yeah. So, not cult classics, maybe just cult films that you should see.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of underground stuff.
Like Video Horror Hound or Video Hound or whatever.
Something
it's
like
called.
That. Yeah. So I checked it out. I remember liking it and I saw that it was back on Netflix and I said, this is my chance because it's obviously been off the rotation for a while. Let's talk about it now that it's here. So, it was easy, available, and I liked it the first time and I wanted to watch it again. So that's how it ended up here.
Very good.
Mad Cheesy.
I chose Jessica Cameron's Truth or Dare. This was a film that the professor and I saw on our first excursion to Days of the Dead Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we got to see one of the inaugural screenings of it. And it took a long time to come out, as some independent films do. And just now that it was available on DVD, I wanted to revisit it. And one, to see if it still held up for us. But two... Jessica was real nice to us, and she pushed the show early on, so I kind of wanted to, hey, your thing came out. Let me highlight it. Cool. So I remember really enjoying it when we saw it with the crowd. It was fun. So that was another thing. It's been 3-4 years now. So
Yeah, I was surprised by that, to see how long it had been out versus once it finally got distribution.
Yeah, because if I don't know if you really remember, but when Professor and I came back from that Chicago excursion, that was one of the things we talked about. And we did that interview with Jessica, and it was – then, and if you look, that was one of our first episodes up, guys, or interviews up, was mm-hmm. that is with Jessica. So that's crazy.
That would have been like what, 12 or 13 Days of the Dead? 13, right?
In Chicago. 14, I think.
Oh, 14?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think I thought I went with you guys in 14.
No, this is the first year we went by ourselves.
Yeah.
So that was I don't know.
Yeah, I know. So it's been that long.
So
yeah.
I've been to 16, 15, and 14. So maybe it was 13 even.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Way
it's
back.
Been a while.
Way back.
When you had the red and black lumberjacks with the hat to match.
Remember rap? Oh, my bad.
All right, Professor.
I picked Parents.
Parents.
And mainly I picked it just because it is a Vestron release. I feel like a lot of people are picking those up.
Sure.
It has its following. It was included in one of those horror packs. So I think a lot of people have seen it just inadvertently that way. Mm-hmm. And it interests me that a notable name in film directed this in Bob Balaban, who isn't, you know, a genre star. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, an accomplished actor. He's been in all kinds of random things. I mean, people would know him, hell, even as the obsessive NBC exec on Seinfeld. And so it was just an interesting pick that I thought at least could spark some decent conversation and might be something that people are picking up and watching. Want to hear his cover?
Sure. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, let's dive in. I think we've decided we're going to cover Pontypool first. Pontypool, Mad Chan, give us the details.
Pontypool, 2008. And it was directed by Bruce McDonald and written by Tony Burgess based off of his book, Pontypool Changes Everything.
Mm.
It starred Stephen McHattie, Lisa Howe, Georgina Riley, and I think it's her. Some of the names, I'm sorry. I think it's Herantz Alankia. I mean, they had weird from where they filmed and stuff, so I didn't.
Being French Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sorry, I don't speak the language.
With you on that one.
All right. Is that it?
That's, I know. Okay. That's all the detail. Yeah, and you're going to get the end. Go ahead.
I couldn't see your eyes. I couldn't see where you were looking.
Oh, like
what
yeah,
you
yeah.
It was going to be. So, all right. So, Pontypool, we have kind of a washed up, would you say a washed up shock jock?
Yes.
Yeah, you've got a washed up shock jock. Tell me, remind me his character's name.
Oh, it's Grant Mazzy.
Grant Mazzy, that's right. So he's kind of this washed up shock jock.
Shock jock.
Shock jock.
You're good.
I keep saying shock jock like he's, you know,
he's French Canadian. Washed up shock jock.
The shock jock. So
play with linguistics there. I like it.
Yeah, you get that? You get jokes, bud?
Especially in this movie.
So
this movie was a joke.
He's kind of washed up. No, he's very washed up. So he's in the vein of like a Howard Stern or perhaps a Don Imus. Probably more like a Don Imus, would you say?
Yeah, from his political views.
He's definitely mirroring Don Imus. Yeah. His cowboy hat, his delivery, all
sure,
of it.
Sure, absolutely. And so we start out with him, you know, he's in the car, he's on his way to the studio, it's like a blizzard out, he's arguing with his agent about the shit jobs that he's been getting, and all of a sudden, this woman, like, he's at a stop, and this woman comes up and like, slaps his window or something, and then she says something unintelligible, and then she's gone. And so, like, that's kind of the beginning of the weirdness that happens in this movie. He gets to the studio. And they're just going about their normal business and getting the morning started. And things just progressively keep getting more odd because they're doing these air traffic reports. And all of a sudden people are congregating in areas and it looks like a riot. And they're mumbling unintelligibly and people are starting to get killed. And it just spirals out of control from there. Would you say it's a pretty good synopsis?
Yeah, it's a tough one to give a summary on, to be
it
honest.
It is, right, right. And I'm telling you... the reason I picked this film is because I really enjoyed it, and the second time around, I still really enjoyed it. I'm telling you, I don't know many people that got past the first 20 minutes of this film. A lot of people started it, a lot of people that I thought would like it, and they were like, it just doesn't go anywhere early, and it just is really, it's a slow burn. It is a slow burn, and I'm not even saying it's a slow burn because of like story development, because the story kind of just continues to unravel in front of you more than like building up per se to something, yeah. If that makes sense.
Well, compared to the things that it was like based on, you know, the War of the Worlds type thing.
Very War of the
right.
Worlds.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it starts as a slow burn. You know, you have to, there's a long build up until we get to that first actual action beat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just, it almost mirrors those things perfectly.
Sure.
So I like that about it.
Okay. Your first impression? My first impression
was... I didn't know what it was at all.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard anything about it watching it.
Because you don't see Pontypool t-shirts at the cons.
Well, no, and I don't. Well, and that's the thing. I haven't seen any. You're the first person that suggested this to me. And that's kind of rare when we go to cons and things. So, yeah. So, I was interested to watch it and then got into it. And my first, it was slow mm-hmm. to start. and then it kind of picks up, but it doesn't pick up. I think it's slow based on traditional horror. It's not slow based on It. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has the perfect pace for the movie that it is.
Right.
But compared to your slasher movies or your other zombie movies, you know, where we start out, like, in this compared to, like, Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, like, you can't expect that going into this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, oh, it was, I mean, but it
even
came
though
out,
you get some of the beats later.
Oh, you do later. Like, yeah, you do later. Oh, definitely. Sure. But yeah, it doesn't start out like that. That kind of throws you into the mix right away. And this is that build, because you got to understand what's going on. They want you to really feel who these characters are before you go through this journey with them.
Sure.
You have to see who they are. So I thought that was neat.
Cool. Professor.
Intrigued.
Yeah.
I think this is an incredibly intelligent film, but too intelligent in some ways for its own good.
Yeah.
I think that it teeters into the abstract with so many different ideas and, you know, cute tie-ins that make it impossible to tie it up.
Yeah.
Now, you know, an example of something like that for me is like Lords of Salem.
Yeah.
I have problems with that movie because it's not what I want it to be instead of appreciating it for what it is.
Same here.
And so I'm trying to caution myself. Like, I've kind of learned from that when I reflect on it, especially with that movie, because it's just a recent one that I loved everything that they built it up to and then was incredibly frustrated with how sloppy it got. Mm-hmm. That's my problem. Right. That's not the filmmaker's problem. And so I'm trying to remember that here because I do like this film. I don't love it. But I like it. I respect it immensely. I was very taken aback with how smart it was and some of, its achievements that it had. But at the same time, you know, an intelligent film is only so intelligent if the viewer's left kind of going, what?
right.
And so that was where I was kind of frustrated. I, you know, I know that not all movies need to tie things up in a, you know, a nice little box with a bow on it. Mm-hmm. But you kind of do when it's this novel and innovative and leading to it. So, I mean, we'll get more into that, but that's my initial thought on it. It's just, I was very impressed with it, but at the same time, frustrated.
I had spoken to Grizz earlier this week about, you know, just, we don't like to talk about movies, you know, that we're going to talk about on the show recording weeks, but I was like, hey, and I threw this thing out about this movie and he made a face. And I was, and I really did. No, it made me go back through and rethink what I thought about this movie. And I had come to the same kind of conclusion. It's not that you find something good about everything. It's literally, it wasn't, like you said it perfectly. It wasn't the thing I thought it was going to be after it got started. It wasn't the thing I wanted it to be. So I was quick to dismiss it. But when you go back through and you let it be what it is, it's great. I mean, I still don't even want to call it a slow burn because all that's just character setup. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need that because when it, like you said, once it goes down, it goes down.
Sure.
It goes down quick too. So I really like that. And you can see elements of other movies in it. Like I brought up the War of the Worlds thing, but we're not talking about the ending right now, but you know, it's got that cool, it's got the Return of the Living Dead vibe. It's got the break-in vibe. It's got this couples. These people are doing this thing. They're going through this together. It mirrors certain life things that go on. Yeah, basically.
It's the thing, too.
So there was a lot in this movie that after I'd seen the face that you made, you're like, we're not going to talk about this. I was like, man, maybe I just need to revisit the way I thought about it. And I agree now. So
sure. And I think that's the hallmark of a decently made horror film. Mm-hmm. You know, is that you can maybe watch it the first time and go, it wasn't for me. But then you could talk to somebody and just let them give a plea bargain. Like, yeah, but think about this. And you can go, oh, I didn't think about that.
Right.
Okay, maybe that can put me in the right headspace.
Right. You know what I mean? It was literally the face you made. I was like, well, I missed something, obviously. So
yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. So where do I want to go from here? I think it does turn a little thing-like in the fact. So, listeners, the bulk of this film, no, all of this film, I'd say 95% of it, takes place inside the studio. And so if you're not prepared for this isolation type film, per se, a cabin in the woods, a cut off from civilization and isolation, you take your pick of where you're trapped in a confined space, this movie may not be for you, like, because this is very much that kind of a film.
Yeah.
And so you're trapped in this space. You're hearing audible reports from the outside world, and you're hanging on every word because you're trapped in the studio with them. You don't know what's happening next. So you're listening. You're listening. You feel the suspense. At least I did. And then, like, the radio gets cut off. The phone gets cut off. And you're like, no, what's happening? What's happening? And then you get a call back, and you're back on. And then in between, I love that, like, all these random characters you get in between. Like, they just got the initial report and all the craziness going in. And then, like, these people dressed like Lawrence of Arabia and Osama bin Laden come in to do a radio skit. And he's like, yeah. No, we're not putting them on the air. We've got important news happening. And they're like, no, we want to do our parody songs. So he's going nuts. He's drinking his scotch. It's just, it was interesting. Before I give the big development, is there any other things you want to throw out about?
I read, I didn't do a whole lot of research on this one. Just kind of read the Cliff Notes, the IMDb notes and things like that. And I thought that was very interesting. The original concept for this movie was a waving line, and character development was going to be different. We were only going to hear it from the shock jock's point of view, and then the woman chiming in, you know, his earpiece chiming in, and then people, the call-ins, you know. And I thought that would have been very interesting as well. But I think the thing that gets you into this movie so much, and the more I think about it, the more it's unfolding, is him, like that guy, because his frustration with the world, his frustration with his station in life, and then. While he's going through all his frustration, there are real problems and things going on outside, and you get to see him almost humanize. You know, he goes from being this pissed off guy to genuinely, hey, what's going on out there? What's happening, buddy? Because you get to see him be this smirky asshole, and then he genuinely starts caring about people, and he shows that. So I thought that was a neat character development.
Yeah, that is a good point. Any thoughts you want to throw out before I give what the twist is?
Nah, just digging more of the deeper
stuff. So it's not a zombie film. You kind of maybe get that impression.
Right,
it's a zombie. Maybe it's an infection. Well, it is an infection. It's not a bloodborne infection.
Not at all.
It's not a bite. It's a word-borne infection. And so it's something in a trigger word that causes your brain to turn. I don't know how the people are infected beforehand or what's inside of them, that because some way this word, or the saying of any word, because it's not just one word.
Right.
There's some way of the saying of words that gets people to snap and become these rabid lunatics. And so this doctor breaks in. He's a doctor, right?
The guy that comes
in through the window.
They mention him on the radio broadcast about the attack happening. Mendez, I think.
He's the doctor. Office? They're at his office, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So all of a sudden he sneaks in through a window. They're ready to kill him, and he's like, no. I am not infected, you know, and he's here to tell him what's going on. Well, and
can you do that accent again?
No. I am not infected.
I'm gonna take my glasses off.
Thank you.
I had to see that coming.
So he comes in, and he's trying to help them figure out what's going on. And in the meanwhile, one of the assistants from the show has turned, and this is like the American sweetheart of the show. She is, she's like a war veteran, and everybody loves her. She's like a hometown hero, and all of a sudden she has turned.
She's emulating the sound of like a tea kettle.
Yeah.
It's very creepy.
Yes. Very creepy. And so the doctor goes, oh, no. Your friend is in trouble. We must go. And so he gets him in the soundproof studio and leaves her outside. And what I love about the suspense of that part is when they're like, they're watching her, and she's like throwing stuff at the window, and she's bashing her head on the window, and she's trying to get to them, and they're like, what, she can't hear us, why is she trying to come in? And all of a sudden she they go, oh wait, can she read lips?
Yeah.
Like, wow, can this word-borne infection be spread also through just seeing what you're saying? I don't know, I thought it was a neat twist.
It really was interesting.
It's hard to sell. Like, it's hard to sit here and talk to you listeners and say, you should. And by the way, that weird sound, is this bird outside? It sounds like an alarm.
It's actually me. I'm infected. What did you just say?
Oh, gosh. We've got to kill Professor. It goes again.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, so that's. Yeah, can you sell the word-borne infection any better than I just did?
No, no. It's very nuanced. I like that when he gets him in the studio, when he says she doesn't know she has it yet. Right. I found that very sinister because you're watching her kind of in this panic state of knowing like something's not quite right, and she's being banished because, you know, then you're starting to get into that mob mentality. And like that's the thing with this film that's tough for me is that I feel like it starts to dabble into like 100 different big important topics.
Yeah.
To the point where it almost becomes counterproductive. Mm-hmm. But no, you're right. It's hard to sell talking about it. It's one of those things where within, you know, the story, it's very effective and innovative because, I mean, we've all seen these types of movies done, you know, 1,000 times. And we love them.
Right.
That bird is insane.
It's weird. I can't see it. Like, I tried to shoo it away earlier. I
feel like it's laughing. That sound is laughing.
Yeah. Because it didn't like Pony Pool.
But yeah, no, the idea of talking, infecting people,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go 10 different directions with that, but at the core of it, just from, you know, with horror. Gossip. Yeah, with horror elements, though. It's very cool. Because then you play in the idea of this soundproof, you know, booth that they can try and remain safe in where they can project out if they need to,
mm-hmm.
but that they can go in there and kind of protect from some of that. It's kind of flipping a lot of the tropes from these zombie films, you know, on their head.
Yeah.
In a way, because we always know we need to find somewhere and lock ourselves up. That only does so much here because you still can talk to each other.
Sure.
How do you know?
And you could still
one of you may already have it. You know what I mean? So, my biggest true complaint is I don't need the movie to end in a way that makes a bunch of sense. I just wish that some of the rules for infection and mm-hmm. effects from them were more clear.
Yeah.
Because right. I feel like the movie loses some of its potency because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you spend more time questioning it and trying to figure out, like, making sure you understand where you could be going off in a lot of different directions, but at the same time, its uncertainty also makes it kind of even more chilling. So
sure.
I won't poo-poo that completely.
Yeah. Right, and the thing about it is that, like, we all know we were talking about zombies or whatever. You have to be bit. There has to be some kind of infection, and with it being a word-borne virus or word-borne thing, all you have to do is find somebody's trigger word. So that kind of lent us to our safe place, mm-hmm. not never being safe.
Yeah.
It was, you said it with the war veteran. Like, they were all locked up inside, but they hit her trigger word, and now she's gone. And then later on, and this isn't spoiler because we always do this, but then they find the doctor's trigger word.
Mm-hmm.
And our shock jock DJ is hellbent, you know, because they keep saying, don't talk out, or speak in a language that's not understood.
Right.
And I thought that was neat because
French.
So they start speaking in French. So the majority of the people, I guess, couldn't understand. They couldn't hear those words that would trigger it. And so they started speaking in French, and he was hellbent on finding out a cure right mm-hmm. away. And I thought that was interesting, where most people in our horror movies are, what are we going to do? How are we going to get out of here? What can we do to survive? This guy's like, how can we cure this and stop it?
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting take on that. But like I said, even his female companion at one point, they find her trigger word.
Yeah.
And he talks her down. How does he talk her down?
So, yeah, this word, kill, was her word somehow. And so she starts babbling on, and they're like,
kill.
Yeah,
kill. They just say it repeatedly.
Kill, 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 kill. And they're like, and by this point, they have made like a safe room where it's just those two. And they're like trapped in there, and they're writing on the walls to try to communicate to one another. She gets drunk because she's just over it. Like, I'm going to die. I might as well die happy.
Right.
And so she keeps battling kill, 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 kill. And he's trying to figure out how to get her out of it, knowing that, you know, this is what's going to happen. This is what's up. And so he says, kill is not kill. Kill is not kill. Kill is kiss. Kill is kiss. Kill is kiss. Kill is kiss. And he keeps like repeating it, trying to like change the definition inside of her head. And so there's this point in the film, some side parts of the film too, where at the beginning of the film, he talks about Pawnee Pool and what the word Pawnee Pool comes from.
It feels like Rod Serling at the beginning.
It's very Rod Serling.
Yeah, dude.
And so it's about how like the definition of Pawnee Pool came to be associated with this meaning of this place where somebody died, right? Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah.
Or somebody had gone off a bridge, so like
Pawnee Pool
was this word that was used for this place where somebody died. And so it was like the redefinition of Pawnee Pool. So that plays in later where he's trying to redefine kill and a kiss. Kill his kiss, you know? And so that ultimately leads up into how they try to reverse the virus for the whole town.
Well, the thing I thought was great about the way they approached that, you know, kill his kiss. For a moment, for a few moments, I was like, oh my, was that his trigger? Because he keeps repeating it, right. Like they were repeating it. So I was like, oh, is that brilliant? Is that his trigger? Because you could kind of feel that things were coming to a head.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, now are we going to see that was his trigger? Maybe she pulls out of it, but he's gone now. And he's a shock jock, so maybe he's going to take back to the airway. So I got very wrapped up in that. I was like, oh, man, that's his word, right? Is that his? But we find out it isn't. He was just really actively trying to bring her down.
Yeah.
Which was neat because there was really no difference in the way he tried to bring her down and the way that they took that word and ran with it. So I thought that was fun.
Which also was a twist on like some of this other genre type stuff. Like you can't talk down a zombie. You're not a zombie. No. You're not a zombie.
Right.
Oh, I guess I'm not a zombie. You know what I mean? Like it was a unique play that would not be able to show up in other films that were of this kind of style. So he takes to the airwaves and he starts just rattling this nonsense off at the airs. He's like, car is cash. Satellite is cellular. You know, like he just starts doing all these things, trying to redefine people's trigger words to undo them. And should I go ahead and say the ending?
Oh, please.
We can go back and talk about it.
Because it's very much like I said earlier, it's the Return of the Living Dead ending, man.
Sure. So what happens is because they're broadcasting their nonsense, the government, who's getting ready to bomb the whole city just to wipe everyone out to contain the infection, says, oh, well, he must be infected too. There's two ways to look at it. Either he's infected too, and we need to go ahead and kill him as well, or maybe this is some sort of government screw up, and we're going to bomb them anyway. To keep it
that way, it's still contained.
It's still contained. Yeah. So that's kind of the ending. You get a countdown, and then the screen goes black.
Yeah. Did you guys let it roll farther?
I watched the end scene. Yes.
The hell was that?
Yeah, I that was my only.
They
question.
Come.
Like, what the hell?
They
is this
come back, and it's the two.
Okay.
And they're in a bar in somewhere completely different, seemingly different people dressed differently. There's no cowboy hat. They're talking differently. It goes from black and white to color. And so then there's this idea of actions can trigger it.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And that's when I finally was like, God damn it. Like, stop. Because I had finally made my peace with where it went and the ideas that it had. And then they completely threw a curveball to that. So I still, in a way, I'm treating it like the movie ends with what you said.
Well, I don't know because you picked this movie. I hadn't done any. But conceptually, this is a trilogy. Did they ever make the other two films?
I have no idea.
Kind of where that end scene. Well, I just read it in the IMDb thing. I mean, honestly, I didn't do a lot of research on this one. But I was with you because it starts out very much Sin City. It's a black and white, you know, a black and white, like, cartoon-esque thing. And then fades into color. And now he's got a gun. And we got to go here and we got to do this. And they're not speaking anything like their characters from before. So yeah, it was almost like this is our next crusade.
Yeah,
like we've done this orally. Now let's go do this.
Like seemed like we came out of what you just thought was the ending and adapted in ways that we're going to explain.
Right.
Maybe if there was an idea of sequels. But one thing another that I like to point out here is Invasion of the Body Snatchers and how much that's what this made me think of. Mm. I certainly agree with the other movies you guys are talking about and the War of the Worlds broadcast. But even down from the beginning when we have the slapping on the car, reminds me of Kevin McCarthy in the 78 remake, running up, slapping on the windshield.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, what's going on here? And then you can't really tell when the people have it in Invasion of the Body Snatchers until there's certain chilling ways of showing it, which is like that in Pontypool, when you start hearing him mimic something. And something that I didn't understand at the time, but I did by midway through the movie that I thought was great. And I was interested if you guys noticed this is when that girl slaps on the car and he's yelling to her, it echoes back differently from him.
I didn't catch that.
And I was like, that wasn't his echo. That's weird. Well, that was that girl emulating what he had just said.
Oh, maybe I did hear that. Now that you say
that. Yeah. And I, at the time I just thought, well, that's weird. The echo's different. So, that to me is a testament of this film and how smart it is, because there's little things like that that I feel like I could watch this five times and I will get new things from each visit.
Because when they would broadcast the different things, you could hear the people outside repeating it, mocking it, saying it back.
Yeah. It's, there is no fat on this film. And while it does move slowly, it doesn't matter because you're still being informed, which I know we've kind of said that already, but it is important to tell that, you know, to people who are maybe interested in this, stick with it because these things you're being given, most of them will in some way or another come back into the film, even if they're not pertinent to the storyline, even as something as simple as the doctor escaping and then you get seen. And, you know, a few other things I wanted to mention. I was insanely impressed with how this never strayed away from feeling like a movie for being very stage-like.
Yeah.
To only have one basic location besides getting there at the beginning, which, you know, is a car shot. Sure. But for the most part, we are in this radio station, and it never feels like it.
Yeah.
It always feels much bigger, which I think is just incredible.
Sure.
I mean, that's some special camera work and storytelling, because usually in those things, you kind of start to feel trapped in it, and you kind of feel like this is a play being filmed.
Sure.
And this never really does that. Yeah. And I think that's wild, because I thought about that halfway through. I was like, I wonder if we're ever going to leave here. Does it matter? Which, you know, I thought was very impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could throw out any last thoughts, I love that the doctor, once he realizes he's infected, leaves. Yeah. He's like, just rattling on.
It's because he's still hanging on to the knowledge that he has up there of knowing, like.
And so he just
takes himself out of the.
Leaves the window the same way he came in.
Yeah.
And then one last thing is when you brought up the Rod Serling part, I love that little black and white narration about all the different family members that killed each other.
Yeah. That was like, cool.
Such and such lived to be this many years, was killed by this person. Also,
the hand of each other.
Yeah, they were died at the hands of each other. So
yeah, it was wild.
Any final thoughts, Matt Chan?
No. I mean, not anything that hasn't been said. I mean, it's one of those kind of, like I said, I had to go back through and take a look at what the film was going to be and what it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And like you said, eloquent. I have not even that word, but like you said so well, sir, like I wanted it to be something else, and I held on to wanting it to be something else. But when you kind of take it for what it is, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Just one scene I hadn't mentioned that I did want to, that I think lends itself to how great a storytelling they did with it being in a one spot, is when she reminds him or clarifies to him that the chopper guy is driving around in his truck and making sound effects as this way of humbling the DJ.
Yeah.
Like, remember where you are.
Right.
And there's a reason you're here.
Yeah.
Because you're washed up, basically.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a wonderful, very quick and witty way of continuing the storyline without dragging it down with anything hokey.
Sure.
Just very original. And then to add to that, when he gets it later, we make sure we point out that he was a pedophile. Just all of these little ways of layering the story without ever spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, there's a lot of neat things
going
on.
That was an interesting
here.
Character point when the chopper guy gets killed and she's very emotional about it. And he's like, I'm sorry, was he a friend of yours? He goes, no. He was a pedophile and we wouldn't let our kids near him, but I knew him for 20 years.
He's a human being.
Yeah, he was a human being, you know. And
she, it was just, this is empathy, you know, like for another person.
For sure.
That was neat.
So I have to recommend this film. You know, like I think people should definitely check this out.
If you'd asked me a few days ago, I'd have said different. But yeah, seriously, like give it its full shot, man. You'll find something in it.
Cool.
I would recommend this to anyone interested. I wouldn't recommend this to anyone. This takes a viewer who's ready to invest in it. This isn't a casual watch. But if you're up for
this,
it,
is definitely it'll put your phone down and watch.
Yeah, it'll reward
you. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Moving right along to a film very similar called Parents. I'm just joking. Parents is nothing like Bonnie Poole. But Matt Chan, can you give us the details on Parents?
Parents, 1989, directed by Bob Balaban and written by Christopher Hawthorne, starring Randy Quaid, Mary Beth Hurt, Sandy Dennis, and introducing Brian Modarski.
Okay.
Yeah.
Professor, do you want to give a quick synopsis?
There really isn't anything too deep to the plot for this. It's pretty straightforward storytelling. We have a kid in 50s suburbia who is starting to question his parents and if there's something sinister about him. And I mean, that's basically the chunk of the summary of it without going into it. I mean, there's not a lot to the plot. Initial thoughts on the film? Had we seen this before?
I've never seen this before.
Me neither.
Never seen this before. I'd seen it in passing on some shelves and thought, that's an interesting cover. Oh, Randy Quaid's in it. That's interesting.
I remember seeing the trailer. That was about it. I'd never seen the movie. Like, I didn't even see it. I don't even remember seeing it on shelves. So I remember seeing the trailer, though, because I remember some of the things with Randy Quaid as I was watching it.
So, I'd seen it once from the 8-pack that Hot Toddy gave to a few of us for Christmas.
Oh, years is it on back. That? Yeah. Right on.
So I'd watched it in passing on that.
That's not on the same one with Ghoulies 3 and Waxwork and stuff, is it?
There was two different ones. Shopping I think Mall. It was on the other one.
Okay, I was going to say, I've got that one. I don't remember being on there.
Yeah.
That one had. They both had a lot of Estron stuff on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, no. So, initial thoughts? This is a weird movie. It's a weird jam. I don't have a whole lot of notes on it. I'm interested to talk about it. It's a weird movie. Mad Chan.
It's a weird movie. The little kid is weird, and Randy Quaid is weird. No, I mean, it's my initial thoughts on the movie was I got to go in. This was another one. I got to go in completely blind. I'd never seen it, so it was just that I got that feel of, all right, something's lurking. And something was lurking, but it was I just kept thinking, all right, something's lurking. We're not seeing it yet, but it was always right there in front of your face. And I'm not going to say what that is yet. We'll get into that.
Sure.
But there's always something that was right there that's the uneasy feeling. And then about a quarter of the way through the movie, my initial thought was, I was like, man, maybe this isn't a horror movie. Maybe the horror is the story. You're seeing his parents from this kid's eyes, you know, and everything. You know, when you're little, you just kind of take your parents, everything your parents do is word. Sure. You know, oh, yeah, this is how we live. This is what we eat. This is what we do.
Yeah,
and then one day you have that thought, like, man, what if they're full of shit? Seriously. And then the kid kind of has his epiphany early. And I was like, oh, no, that's awesome if that's the way this is going. And then it's kept going. And I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah, when I picked this, I fully expected anything on the spectrum. I was like, these guys may both hate this movie. Mm-hmm. They could love it. Fine with either because, you know, the way of storytelling in this is not conventional. And so I don't expect that to land with everyone, including listeners.
Right.
But I do think that it's interesting enough and covers certain parts of the fringe of the genre that it makes it worth talking about.
Right.
So, I mean, do we want to kind of dig into what we thought about the film?
Sure.
Okay. Let me go first.
Yeah, please.
Here's what I like about this film more than anything is this tackles real fear for children like no other film does, in my opinion.
Sure.
Now we have kid horror movies, Monster Squad. There's a whole endless list of them.
We did a whole episode on them.
But these are kids. Yeah, the kids are all right.
Yeah.
Very good. But they're dealing with supernatural things. The films are fantastic. They're designed to entertain.
Sure.
Whereas this taps into a very real feeling for children. Mm-hmm. I think the majority of them experience it sometime or another.
Right.
And I'm not trying to go all Freudian or anything weird on that. But there is this feeling of, you know, your parents are unimpeachable.
Mm-hmm.
They are your parents.
Right.
And what happens if they do something that scares you? You know, I mean, most of us as kids at some point, we're all raised with parents, you know, that we love and care about who did a good job,
mm-hmm.
luckily. But, you know, and maybe you guys never had this. I can't, you know, think back to a specific example. But there's that moment like where maybe mom or dad loses their temper and says mm-hmm. something just a little too harsh.
Yeah.
And you think it's the end of the world. But you take that into consideration here with what this kid's suspecting is that his parents are killing and eating people. Who's going to help him?
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? And,
especially in the 50s.
Right. And so then you mix in that with the 50s suburbia. married to this, just the blackest of comedy in their approach to it that almost feels like David Lynch at times. And it's very, very scary. Do you know what I mean? To think about, because this kid, that's it. Like, those are your parents.
Yeah.
And you are not fully sure. And you're starting to snoop around, and there's some things that are very scary. And you're not sure if some of this is nightmares. And, you know, for better or for worse, you know, with this film, if you don't like it or you do like it, I do think that that's the most important thing about it in terms of a conversation point, is this taps into the, you know, just unescapable fear of a child.
Sure.
That they can't get away from.
Right.
Because that's mom and dad. And and that's terrifying to me.
And it's fear coupled with, once you reach like certain ages, it's also like trust, like, can I trust my parents to be the ones who are caring? Like, you grow up developmentally through like maybe 7 or 8, knowing that that's what they're going to do. And then you kind of like get this, well, are they, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought about that a little bit when, you know, I started deer hunting with my dad when I was like 10, and, you know, we'd go in at like 3 in the evening and then come out of our tree stands when it was dark or right around dark. And I remember this one time we were hunting and like, I was up in my tree. And it just kept getting darker and darker. And my dad never like climbed down and came and got me, like got darker. And then, so like, we're sitting in the dark. I'm like, that's it. Dad left me. Like, that's what's up. Like, you know, I'm an orphan now, or I'm left to die. Right. Like, that's what happened.
He gave you a bow and told you to stay out there and become a man.
Right. Yeah. Like, I just thought like, that's what happened. Well, right. No, what happened was dad was 50 yards from me and there were deer under his stand and he didn't want to come out and spook the deer. So that they wouldn't come back the next day.
Right. You know
what I mean? But in my mind, as a kid,
yeah,
who, again, once you're having these things, we're like, maybe this isn't what's up, you know? Like, maybe this is where we're at now. And so that kind of fear, I felt that, like, idea in this film a little bit. Like, when you get to that point where, like, maybe I can't trust my parents.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't like me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, my dad came and got me. That's the end of the story.
Right. No, that's one well, example, so. Though. That's a great example, though.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, all it takes is like a little white lie that you catch your parents in, who maybe were doing something for your own sake to make you question it.
Sure.
And, you know, that's earth-rattling
for
a very short window of time. But, I mean, it's cool that you can cite an example to think back. You remember that feeling, even if it were for just 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So.
Matt Jim?
Yeah, I kind of, like I had said that in my opening statement about this movie, those things are, that's just, it's so raw, you know, it's because you have to take everything when you're little, what your parents tell you to do as, as work.
Right.
And that's what, this is what we do. So, the Randy Quaid's character was just the right amount of creepy. And but stern 50s father.
Yeah.
Like, he played that. So to the point where, like I said, I wasn't sure exactly what was going on for a while, because it was like, oh, is this kid just imagining this? Is this the fear that's playing in his head? Or is this guy really creepy because he was just, you've got to eat your meat. You've got to sit, you know, he's it's values, it's things he's instilling in him and putting into him. And at certain points in the movie, when this kid sees something, or, you know, he goes and checks something out, or when they have him start talking to the counselor, you know, it's like, no, your parents aren't here to hurt you. They're here to mold you. And eventually that's the theme of the movie. It's like, no, this is what we do. We eat this meat, and you're going to be one of us, and I'll cut it up and shove it into your mouth if you want me to. Like, it's to that point where it's brainwashing, or whatever, however you want to put it. You know, I thought that was neat.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes in the movie. And, you know, I'll come right out and say I wasn't crazy about this movie. I'll say that, you know, I wasn't crazy about it. I don't think I'll ever watch it again, but it had its moments. One was right towards the very beginning where Randy Quaid's going to put his son to bed and he's like, oh, you don't need to be afraid of the dark. There's only one place we need to fear the dark.
How long he takes to point.
And he points at his head. He's like, our mind.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoo, boy, we're going there right now. You know, and maybe that is what triggered it. You know, like, maybe that's what got the kids so scared.
If you look at Randy Quaid today, you can kind of see that this movie was heading somewhere.
This movie is definitely where he's landed at.
Randall was not acting today.
So I've only got a few more notes. I mean, anything you guys want to throw out?
Oh, what the hell was his job? Anyone?
He did somewhere he worked with chemicals.
Yeah.
Chemicals, right? But he was also in a morgue.
Yeah, I was.
They called him in to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They were like cutting people. That's where he was getting his.
Sure.
Oh, do you want to go ahead and tell what's happening in the movie?
Oh, I mean, in terms of.
Like, they were he was harvesting organs.
Yeah.
Every time you saw liver, it was real liver. Every time you saw. Like, he's in this morgue and he's harvesting pieces, meat, food, essentially, from people. And I just thought it was weird because we see him in this chemical plant, you know, where the guy gives the pin spiel. He's like, hey, this pin is made out of chemicals, you know? And we go from there. And then a couple scenes later, he's in a morgue. And I'm just like, what the hell does this guy do? Mm-hmm. I just thought that was kind of weird. But it almost felt like he was and did what we needed him to do in this movie. You see what I'm saying? Instead of defining it. But me being that guy, you know, mom was obviously a house mother. And I thought that was neat. Plus, I liked the idea that they gave him a little friend that was just as messed up as he was.
Yeah.
The little girl. The girl from
more messed up.
The girl from the moon. Yeah. So.
Yeah, she went buck wild. Yeah. Got out that wine, jumping in the freezer.
It's crazy.
Take off your shirt. I was like, man, this is getting weird.
They had so many PSAs in that one scene. They were just like, listen, we're going to go ahead and knock out all these public service announcements right now.
Little girl cray.
Yeah. Now, this... just some other things that it made me think of was the tie-ins. I know I mentioned Lynch, but like, you know, obviously Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the family and the eating. Right, I know it's not like that, but it's like if you marry that with like an old sitcom and some of David Lynch's just odd humor.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what this movie is. And I know, you know, Delicatessen, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. That gets a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. That came out 2 years after this.
Oh, okay.
And so it's interesting to watch this and see like the difference in it, because this film is very foreign-like in terms of its brand of humor and presentation, but it was made here.
Yeah.
And so it does not carry the weight that something like Delicatessen does, which it's the same guy that did like, I can't remember if it was Alien 3 or 4, Amelie. He's very stylized.
Yeah.
This was very stylized. American audiences didn't want it like they did with Delicatessen. So Delicatessen, I think, is remembered much more fondly, but it ties into a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing that I kept thinking of when I was watching it this time, because obviously I know we're covering it, I'm sure you guys are saying you try and be a little bit more analytical. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking of Brothers Grimm and adults and, you know, not trusting them and the eating of children and human meat and all that. So it almost had a modern fairy tale feeling to it in the lights of, you know, them. So those are just more things I was thinking of when I was watching it.
And I like you said, with the different movies, man, you got I really love the Halloween scene where the teacher gets thrust into the closet and then the knife starts jabbing through and breaking the boards.
With the bizarre music too.
Well, very much Jamie Lee from Halloween. I was just like, this is dope, man.
Yeah,
like,
that was scary.
You could tell that there were different elements that were plugged in there, and they were like, hey, we do have influences. This isn't just, you know, this isn't this weird thing. Like you said, I didn't really put the Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing together. That was a good analogy, but I did catch the Halloween thing. Was there anything you picked up on?
I really liked, well, as far as influences go, but there was a great scene. I mean, it's something that's been in other films, when the school psychologist does find the bodies.
And
that great pull away screaming shot.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Basement all the way out. Like, I mean, that's definitely been done in other movies. Right. And I really liked it.
That
here.
Was cool. That was seamless.
Yeah, that was an awesome shot.
See, doesn't it go out to them pulling up and arriving at the house?
Yeah,
that was a great little setup.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of controversy to it. We have our parents get theirs kind of inadvertently with the kid and the wine falling over on him during the struggle, and goes up in flames, and young Buck ends up living with Grandma and Grandpa.
So. Which, like, you have to chuckle at that scene.
Yeah. Again, man. I was going to say, who may or may not be cannibals as well.
Grandma leaves him with a glass of milk and a meat sandwich.
Yeah. Pan over to it. Pretty good. Any final thoughts? I've said everything I've got to say on this one.
Me too.
Again, because I won't watch it again, I could only recommend it to very few people.
I would recommend it to fans of the things that I mentioned that it's kind of like. I think if you, for instance, like David Lynch, you'll really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the scene with them at the dinner table spinning.
Yeah.
It's just the frankness between father and son. There's a percentage of people that are going to think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, but anybody who's remotely interested, check it out.
Okay. Definitely. All right. Mad Chan, Jessica Cameron's Truth or Dare.
2013, directed by Jessica Cameron, written by Jessica Cameron and Jonathan Scott Higgins, starring Jessica Cameron, Ryan Kaiser, Heather Dorff, Devney Penn, and Jesse Wilson. This is kind of like a who's who of indie film, or at least the indie film that we are in our circle, not just our, but our con scene. This is kind of a who's who of those people.
Okay.
That's neat. We open up, we have a group of, what do you want to call them? Internet sensations.
YouTubers.
Let's call them YouTubers. That's a good way to put it. We have a group of YouTubers that they're called the Truth or Daredevils, and they make videos of them doing jackassery type stunts and posting them online, and we open the movie with one of the guys being shot. And that's kind of where everything goes. And you find out that it's just a joke. It's just a prank. That's all they do. They're internet celebrities. And we get to meet one of their fans.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to put it. We get to meet a fan of theirs. And they start filming a new video. And shit goes awry. Initial thoughts?
It's an interesting film.
You think I say it like that?
I wasn't a big fan of it, to be honest, right off the bat. Was not a big fan of the film for reasons I'll discuss later. I think it's not a terrible film, I'll say that, but just not for me. Right. So that's my initial impression.
That's fair.
Yeah.
When discussing indie films, it's important for me to clarify that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of an uncomfortable spot because it's like we have to judge on the same scale as these big budget films,
right?
Because at the end of the day, we're encouraging people to dedicate an hour and a half, 2 hours of time to watch a film that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, with that, I try and keep that in mind, as we discuss this. I think that this movie has some merits to it that make it an interesting enough watch that I wouldn't, just crap on it.
Sure.
But I will say, and it was an interesting kind of relationship for me, this was a much different movie watching in a crowded room at a convention versus at home.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'll leave it at that for now. So, don't get me wrong, I'm not getting ready to eviscerate this film that people worked on, but it was a much different experience.
And I want to add, too, we talk about how you discuss indie film and review them and rank them and things like that, or rate them. And, this is a film that made its way onto the shelf at Family Video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about distribution,
it eventually got there.
If I made a film that made it to the shelf at Family Video, I would feel like I made it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that being said, we've talked about some things that have made their way to Family Video. We've talked about things like Shark Exorcist or Four Milfs versus Zombies or any of these things.
Oh, what'd you think?
I would tell you to rent Truth or Dare every day of the week of those films.
Yeah, right? Compared to those.
You know what I'm saying? Definitely. So when I talk about what I don't like about this film, don't hear that I think it's a crap film. Don't hear that.
Right.
Because there is crap on the shelf at Family Video.
We've reviewed crap.
Exactly. And so, this is on the shelf there, and I would tell you to rent this over 100 of those. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, definitely.
So, Mad Chan.
Like I said earlier, coming back into my second viewing of this, I enjoyed it. I still enjoyed it. There were lots of things about this movie that I kind of got, and getting to interact with some of these people over the years. Maybe I'm a little more biased, but I've been also waiting on this. Because when we came back from Chicago, I wanted you to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked several times over the years, hey, when is this coming? So I kind of waited and waited and waited on this. And when I finally got a hold of it, it wasn't even oh, hey, I'm going to go rent this. I flat out bought it. I I went to my local Family Video and was like, hey, man, I'm taking this. You know, like, charge me for it appropriately. Mm-hmm. And now I own it. And I'm not mad at that. The effects were good. They're head and shoulders above most mm-hmm. indie films that we've seen.
Sure.
Looks great. The story was there. The character work was there. I think Ryan Kaiser is amazing in this film. I mean, really, like, that kid, I don't even want to call him a kid. He's not that much younger than us. But he really made this movie, man. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas everybody else, and I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, but everybody else was playing in the minor leagues. Ryan Kaiser was knocking him out of the park with his performance. Like, he got there.
Which one was Ryan Kaiser?
He's the fan. Oh, okay. The fan, okay. Yeah. And he actually brought it. I mean, he brought it in this, and I think that's what kept me going again in the second viewing was I remembered his performance, and then the second time it lived up to that again, 100% for me.
Okay. Professor.
In terms of?
You know, this I didn't get to see it in a group. Right. So I watched this Home Alone. And gosh, where do I want to start? Okay, so let me start here.
Can I take some of the piss out of it real quick?
Sure.
Watching this with the wife made the act of who loves horror movies. She's watched mm-hmm. a lot, and we've had many discussions with her. Sure. Towards the end, as things were building and escalating, her first time viewing it as well, she was like, "Nah, too much. I'm not digging this." She loved it. I mean, you've seen
sure.
it. Like,
sure.
She's in love with horror movies. And there were certain times where she was like, nah, too much. Couldn't go there. So I kind of wanted to take the piss out of some of that.
Yeah.
Because like you said, we saw it in a much different atmosphere yeah. the first time. So please.
Right. And that was the direction I was getting ready to go. Yeah. So when I watched this, so this is what's interesting. So on a recent episode, we just reviewed Unfriended. And starting to watch this and where this goes, I was like, man, this is a poor man's Unfriended. But in reality, this was made before Unfriended. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And have you watched Unfriended?
Oh, Tim? Yeah. I saw it on my own.
Do you like it?
No.
Okay, that's fair.
No, my real quick thing, I didn't chime in on that episode. My real quick thing about Unfriended was I just got annoyed. I'm not that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the setup was different for me. Okay. And it's nothing to take away from those people that made that. It's just I didn't like I'm a little more traditional than that.
Okay. So in Unfriended, you know, we got this notion of like this group of teenage friends starts finding out things about one another,
right,
that they've done to hurt each other.
Right. Oh, okay.
And so that's what happens in this circle of people here is you start finding out secrets about them.
Right.
And, it just like Nicole said, for me, too much.
Yeah.
It was in the wrestling world, we talk about cheap heat, like what you do as a heel
yeah.
to come out and build cheap heat to get people to stop at you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you come out and you're like, you know, it's like when Sergeant Slaughter made the heel turn and was like with the Iraqis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, America's stupid. You're all idiots. Right, and of course, right. to a group of wrestling fans in most places, they're going to go, I hate you. You know what I mean? Like it's cheap heat.
Yeah, these characters really start one-upping each other really quickly really with these fast. dark secrets.
All of a sudden, we're finding out, oh, they're brother and sister and they're banging each other. Oh, guess what? He's trans. Oh, guess what? Like she's pregnant. He's got a tumor. It this or that. And so it's like it's just like cheap heat.
Yeah, don't forget banging kids.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This cat's talking to a 9-year-old or whatever, 11-year-old.
Yeah. And so it's just like, man, the cheap heat. And then I'll get into my ultimate gripe later. But like
that's not your ultimate gripe.
Oh, I'm gonna get into the cheapest of the heat.
He's like, oh man, this fatty Arbuckle and buckling type bullshit.
Oh dear. But it just so that was that's,
I got
like
you.
Nicole.
That's what
took me out.
And that's what took that's ultimately why.
And everybody has their tolerance
meter. Right.
For some people that we know, some people like horror films, like they can't even handle like Devil's Rejects when Otis puts the gun down the older lady's panties. Like,
yeah.
That's too much.
We've all got our limits.
That's too rapey for them, or that's too cheapy.
Animal violence.
Yeah.
Yeah,
professor checks right out with animal violence.
Yeah, there's just certain things that we chuckle at and we take in stride, and there's certain things that we just once you hit that certain level.
Yeah, because at the core of it, you want to be entertained. And
right.
If you get to a certain point, you're like, to hell with you. I don't want to even finish your movie.
These
you
were
do.
Supposed to be oh shit moments that were just like, well, I didn't see that coming after the second time. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, right. Oh, right. Okay, he's talking to little girls. Oh, they're brother and sister, and they're sleeping together. And from that point on, every time that they stepped it up, instead of me going, oh my gosh, it was just like, really? You know? So that's me.
No, so, you're good.
Yeah, so I'll throw it out, let you guys talk about some stuff.
Can we talk about something real quick?
Sure.
What did you like about the film?
Professor.
I
will say this. What did I like about the film?
Yeah.
To me, I think the acting was fine.
Yeah.
I think the direction was fine.
Yeah.
It just was the story was not written in a way. I don't want to say it was bad writing. Is there a way to say you didn't like the story, but it wasn't
bad
writing?
No, you just flat out, you just didn't like the story wasn't your cup of tea, man.
Exactly.
You're good.
Exactly.
Lawrence of Arabia is a great film. I want to sleep through it.
Yeah.
It's just not for me. You know, it's all right.
No, exactly.
The top two notes I had on here was nice direction from Cameron. I think that the production value is kind of doo-doo at times, but that's limitations.
Sure.
It's an indie film.
Yeah.
And I think that her direction is good.
Yeah.
I think it's impressive. I think that the stunts, while they may not be the most effective for me in terms of shock value and being kind of worn out with them by halfway through, they're always done effectively.
Yes.
And I will give them credit for that. And I think that that's a testament to her and her crew for executing those things. And I also, as you mentioned before, right at the top, and I had remembered that from the initial viewing, was Kaiser.
Yeah.
And I think that he is great. And I think that at times he seems hammy, but I don't think that's fair. I think it's that the rest of them can't keep up with him.
Oh,
no offense to him.
Yeah.
I think that they're serviceable, and there's some that are better than others in there. I don't think anybody's a bad actor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think that he was that good.
Yeah.
And I think that anything that may have been a little too much wasn't his choice. I think that's just in the story.
Yeah.
And I think that he executed it well. He was very gracious, too. I remember on social media after the film, him reaching out and interacting with us about our reactions to the film, not the other way around.
Oh.
And so, I mean, he seems like a pretty cool guy. And I thought that both his performance and the direction and the special effects were notable for a movie that, you know, doesn't have all the money in the world to do what they want. I thought that they made it work. But I'm kind of in the same boat in terms of, at a certain point, the button pushing doesn't work for me because the story doesn't facilitate it in terms of something new for me as a viewer. I can handle things that I think that are just vile or upsetting if they're within a story that I'm focused on the narrative and getting to the end of it. Whereas this, Among Friends came out a couple years before this, Danielle Harris's movie.
Right.
Very much like this. Unfriended After. Mm-hmm. 10 Little Indians. I mean, you can through so many films that has unsavory people being unveiled and getting theirs as we go. Now, this is different in its own way, but at the core of it, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that vehicle. And so when I'm dealing with, you know, like having to perform oral sex on an injured woman, I'm not scared. I'm not shocked. I'm just bored.
Yeah.
I'm just like, this is like kind of a shame for how we started out with something as simple as chewing glass and how I'm sitting there even on the second viewing going, Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, so uneasy.
I was like, good call on the truth or dare thing. That is tough to watch. It's well acted. Everything about it was effective. And so when we elevate it to that, I'm thinking, who are you making this movie for?
Yeah. By the time
because the earlier stuff is getting the horror fans.
Yeah.
I don't think most people need that. Now, I will say, I think that this film was made in a lot of ways for the convention and the fans in a room, because there's that feeling of one-upping just interacting with each other in there and it just being kind of, you know, rowdy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time. So that's why I say it's important. Like, if you're listening to this episode and you're interested, you know, think about that.
Sure.
Because this is a different film at home than it is in a group with 50 people.
Plus, when we saw this, it was like a midnight viewing. Everybody, we were already 6 or 7 beers in.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was, and it was just rowdy. And the we were elevating each other. But I agree with you guys in that that respect. Rob Zombie has said this, and Sam Raimi really injects this next thought. There was too much, like you said, one-upping horror. There was no comedy beat. There was no social beat. There was no humanity beat to make the horror more effective.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of took you to this level, and then, like you said, it stair steps from this level. It never levels off and gives you time to, I don't want to say catch your breath. It's not like it's a thrill ride, but it never gives you a chance to go, oh, okay, and maybe start to feel, I don't want to even want to say sympathetic because they're not supposed to be those characters, but you never feel anything more. You never see anything more than, oh, well, we're bad. Now we're worse. Now we're worse. And this guy's worse. And this guy's worse. And this guy's worse. There's nothing that levels you off to make the next scene more horrific.
Right.
It's just, and that's why I feel like by the end, everybody's starting to get that, all right, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
There's too much of this going on because you didn't have any chance to breathe and go, okay, all right. There was no cut scene. Had they, and I'm not a director, but, you know, we've seen that in so many other films, like Raimi does. You throw in that one little cut scene of two other people over here doing something else.
Right.
And then you come back to it. And there's just none of that because we're stuck and confined in this one room. You can't leave the tension. And at a certain point, the tension doesn't break. The tension, you're just over the tension.
Dissipates.
Yeah. Like,
fizzles back down.
Exactly. Right, it's like you get up to the height and then you're sitting there watching it and he's digging inside of her. Like you got a hand inside of her reaching for a fetus. Mm-hmm. And you're like, is this fetus going to come out? And in the same breath, you're like, all right, we're good. Where are we going? Like by the time we get to his big reveal at the end or his big walk out at the end or whatever the hell you want to call it, you're just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I guess that was kind of the thing is like, it never lets you stop
and
chill for a second to keep the tension going.
Right.
Because that was the one thing about funny, like movies like Funny Games. Mm-hmm. They're so well constructed. They put you in this high, tense moment. And then they even leave and leave you in a room with this woman for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the whole time you're going, well, and then they take that off of you because she calms down. Mm-hmm. So you can calm down with her for a minute. And then we're right back into
the
You just don't get that moment.
Right. That's a great point.
So my note.
No.
I wrote several notes for this. I did write.
Like, you know what I brought to this episode? A post-it note.
I did write several notes for this me. But yeah, when it got to the point where it was like incestual necrophilia kind of lingus, I was like, well, that's about it for me today.
I get you. And that's about
where. And so like I said, it raised and they were like, oh, all right, your next dare. He's got a tumor. And I was like, bet it's in his nuts. It's in his testicles.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. And oh, you're going to have to dig a baby out of her. And I was like, all right. The cheap heat has peaked.
Yeah.
The thermometer has broken.
And that's the, yeah, it's like.
And so that made the ending, which I feel like could have had potential with him walking out and, you know, thinking that the media is there to praise him, you know, like that could have had potential. I think so. But by that point, it just was gone.
And that was kind of the, like you're talking about, like, oh, he's got nut cancer and this and that. It just, we didn't spend enough time getting to know these characters and wanting to like any of these characters to make them, when you find out they're bad people, they're, it's like, okay, well, we didn't know he wasn't a bad person or she wasn't a bad person.
Well, I just assume most YouTubers are bad people.
Well, and so,
except Shane Dawson. Shane Dawson's awesome.
Another thing with that is if you're going to use upsetting subject matter like this, give weight to it so it's effective.
Right.
And I know that's kind of what we're saying, but it's like, man, like 10 years from now when somebody sees this, they're just going to see you going, ew, transgender.
Right.
Like there was no more to it. It was just like, that's foul. It's like, that's maybe not the best way to do this.
Right.
And I know that's not what they're intending because it's in a self-aware manner.
Right.
But I wish that there would have been more added to this, what somebody was going through with cancer, what somebody was going through with a baby inside of them.
And that's like those cut scenes. If every person's backstory would have had a 2-minute cut scene, just to, like him sitting in there.
Right.
Like he's like, you're going to have to cut the tumor out of him. You cut to him sitting in a doctor's office, watch him emotionally go through something.
Yeah.
And then, it'd be like, I'm sorry.
And that would have given us our break.
Right. Show the transgender person going through the difficult transition period in their life. Show us the incestual brothers and sister.
being abused as kids, and that's why they're like this. You know what I mean? Right. Like, show us why we care.
And you can still stay dark in all of those elements, but you give us that break. So when things happen, we're just like, no, not the baby, or him looking lovingly into Jessica Cameron's eyes, like, we're going to have a kid. Oh, my God. And then later, you know, when it's like, nope, I'm getting that thing out of you, you're going to have more of a sympathy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, not the baby.
Yeah.
But when you say it's a baby, you just assume it's a baby. So.
One last gripe that I'm going to say here is just there were so many chances to fight this guy.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many chances for anybody, male or female, to step up and just spear this guy and tackle him and take a chance on stopping the charade. Because obviously, once you get to certain, I mean, obviously from the beginning, when he's having you chew glass.
Yeah, it's like, all right, you better not turn your back, son.
Yeah, because once you're chewing glass, he's wanting to hurt you bad. Like, you know, no one's going to get out of this unscathed.
And that's the thing. If you got that dread, that real dread of going, we're all going to die anyway, which they're all thinking.
Right.
Then what? If you're going to die anyway, why not try to dig yourself out of this hole?
It's straight up United 93. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I'm with you, dude.
All right, well, these guys have taken over the plane. We might as well try and fight them. You know, like.
Might as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get you on that.
Yeah.
And it's just this this idea that he keeps walking around and rebinding people's wrists
to him, right, put his gun down. Right. I was like, come on, man. Smoke that dude.
But I tell you what, they did a good job with the tension with the shotgun. Not once.
Yeah.
But the second, oh my God.
Yeah,
that
was good.
They did real good. That was a real good buildup of tension there. I remember that from before, but it kept me there. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Well, my final thought is,
yeah,
if you like independent horror film, definitely give this a chance. Definitely. Oh, yeah. Because I could sit here and name you 50 to 100 films I've seen way, and I'm not saying way worse, because this isn't a bad film. I'm just saying, like, films that I did not like that I would choose this film over.
Oh, so, definitely.
Like, please, if you like independent film, check this out and give it a chance, because you're going to find that it's not like, you know, a lot of the schlock that's sitting on the shelf at Family Video. It's got some chops and some merit to it.
So, and guys, there's a reason this is on the shelves right now.
Sure.
I mean, like somebody else saw the merit in it, just like we're seeing the merit in it now, man. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah. So, final thoughts?
Oh, definitely check it out.
Yeah, just if you're interested in independent film, watch it. I think there's enough promise, because part of the fun in independent film watching is seeing people before they are who they are a lot of times. Taking a chance. I think that there is certainly promise for Mr. Kaiser and Jessica Cameron as a director. So, I mean, those two alone and some of the execution of the gags and gore in this, I think could be fun for somebody. If you're interested in independent film, pick it up.
And there's a lot more out there. Jessica's got other movies in the pipe. Ryan's got a movie in which he plays, Charles Manson out there right now that's available. I mean, there's a lot out there, guys. Check us out.
Okay, great. Well, wrapping up another edition of the Monster Mash. We are your Midwest Monsters. We are Grizzly Abner and
Mad Chan,
Professor Wagstaff.
Stay scary, me amigos.
Bye now.
Kills.